This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Armando Viramontes, who's a staffer working on the bill AB 583 in the office of California Assemblymember Lonnie Hancock. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
Now, you work in the office of Assemblymember Lonnie Hancock, who's the chief author of AB 583, the California Clean Money and Fair Elections Act, I assume now, of 2006.
Yes.
What's your position there, and what's been your involvement with the drafting of this bill?
I am a legislative aide for the Assemblymember, and we have been working on this bill now for close to 3 years. It's been an amazing process, and we look forward to getting the bill to the Assembly floor this year.
Okay. In the most concise way you can, tell our listeners what AB 583 will do if it becomes law.
Essentially, AB 583 would do is create the clean money system of public financing of elections here in California. Simply put, if a person wanted to run for Assembly or Senate or for statewide office, they'd have to gather a set number of $5 contributions and signatures to run for that office. In doing so, they're securing a broad base, they're proving that they have a broad base of support, and therefore they're a legitimate candidate to receive the public stipend.
And those small contributions need to come from residents and voters, in registered voters, in the district they're going to represent, right?
Absolutely. You can only get them from members of that district. So if you're running for statewide, that's the state of California.
Right.
If you're running for the Assembly, 14th Assembly District, it's only within that district.
But nobody's going to be able to get those from outside the state.
Not at all.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at a copy of the legislative analysis of this bill that was prepared for the Committee on Elections and Redistricting, which just passed by a 4-3 vote.
Yes.
This bill on a Tuesday.
Yes.
It's got some complicated provisions, and I'm hoping we can get a clear and concise explanation of them so that people who want to support this bill, or for that matter oppose it, will know exactly what it does.
Absolutely.
And why don't we start with some of the terms of art that are set out in this bill, and talk about what they mean exactly. The first one that I'd like to start with is the exploratory period. Is that when people put on their helmets and go searching in new areas that haven't been explored yet, or what exactly is
to boldly go and they've never gone before?
Exactly. What's the exploratory period?
The exploratory period is a period of time in which a candidate who's going to run clean actually has a time frame from which to gather the $5 contributions.
Okay.
Themselves.
And, so, yeah. And how long is that period? When does it start? When does it end?
You're hitting me up with some real specifics now, Mark.
That's right.
I believe it's 18 months.
Right.
I'll have to look into that one.
Yeah, that's right. You want to get while we're here, I can email you the link to the
analysis.
The analysis, and we can go over it together.
That sounds great.
We can show. And in the meantime, why don't you talk about the qualifying contribution term?
Okay, qualifying contribution means a $5 contribution. It's a set amount. It's only $5. If you're running for Assembly, you have to get 500 of them for Assembly, 1,000 for Senate, and it goes upwards as you go up higher to office. For governor, it's 25,000.
Okay, I may have outsmarted myself here. I don't want to give our listeners, all of them, your email address, which I don't have yet. So you can look it up on the Ledge Info site, and that'll take you there. Okay, so these qualifying contributions have to be are $5, no more, no less.
Correct.
Can the candidates collect money to help them collect these contributions, these qualifying contributions?
I'm sorry, repeat that question again.
Can candidates collect money to finance their efforts to collect these qualifying contributions?
Yes. During that preliminary period, that exploratory period, candidates can raise up to $100 contributions to help them get those $505 signatures.
Okay, and are there restrictions on where that money comes from?
They have to be from people within the district.
Okay, which means the state for constitutional officers or the Assembly or Senate district.
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's now the exploratory period. I'm out there looking for qualifying contributions. What's the qualifying period during which this is happening?
The qualifying period is the period about 270 days before the primary election, and it ends right after the 90 days of that election.
90 days before the primary election.
Correct.
Right.
Before the day of the primary election.
Right.
And that particular period allows for candidates to also submit those $5 signatures.
Right.
And to also establish whether they're going to be certain kinds of candidates. Are they going to be a performance-based candidate? Are they going to be an office-qualified candidate?
Okay, we're going to get to that, where it gets a little murkier. Distinguish here between signatures and $5 contributions. Do potential clean money candidates need to collect both or more of one or the other, or what's involved with that? And what kind of reporting requirements are there for these $5 contributions?
Well, the $5 contributions, as you know, have to be from people in the district.
Right.
When they give that $5 contribution, they also have to sign a form that goes to the Secretary of State
right.
saying that this is the only contribution they're giving to this particular candidate in this particular race. We also have restriction. If a person gives a $5 campaign contribution and signs that form,
right.
they can't give another $5 to another candidate in that same race.
Okay, is there a reason for that? Why people who can't decide between candidates think they just want to have more the merrier? Why is it that people can only give to one candidate?
I think we want to diversify the number of people that which people go to those 500 folks.
Okay.
So if you had several candidates, we wanted them to go as far as they could.
Okay. Now, can this money be collected over the internet by PayPal, or do people have to stand out in front of the supermarket and ask people to hand them $5 bills?
They actually have to go get a signature, although we're looking at actually a receipt, so they have to go to that, knock on that door and still visit with people.
Right.
We are looking into technological solutions, but at this point we're going door-to-door.
Okay. It's pretty clear here that these are time periods, and we've got some information now about the $5 that are the qualifying contributions. Now we're getting into something called an office-qualified candidate. What's an office-qualified candidate?
Office-qualified candidate, to use a very similar term, basically your standard political party. So it's basically any party that's received or any governor's candidate that's received more than 10% of the votes in the last election.
Okay, now in practice this means the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, right?
Yes.
Okay.
In some cases, it would also mean the Green Party. Yolo County, I believe, Peter Camejo received 15%.
Right.
Also, in Lonnie's own district, the Green Party, I think, goes above 10%.
Okay.
And in San Francisco, they go above 10%.
Okay.
So in those key areas, they would actually be considered office-qualified party.
Okay, those are the only three parties, the Democratic, Republican, and Green.
Yes.
Can be office-qualified, can support office-qualified candidates. Nobody else can.
No.
Okay. Now, so how do you become an office-qualified candidate?
Well, you have to get a party on the ballot and achieve that 10%. We did provide the flexibility in the system for people to also, if they're a third-party candidate, they have to get the half of the number of the qualifying contributions. So, in the case of the assembly, you have to get 250,
right.
and they get a part of the money.
How much? We're going to focus on that a little later. But how much of the money do they get?
They get 20%.
Okay.
So, in the case of the assembly, they would be walking in with $20,000 for their campaign.
Okay. Now, so for the for people who are registered Democrats, registered Republicans, or registered Green Party members,
mm-hmm.
They can only get this money as an office-qualified candidate. Is that right? Or what about multiple Democrats, Republicans, or Greens?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
I guess I'm wondering, does one need to receive the nomination of the party to qualify? Or
there's
one only one. Essentially, one needs to be a candidate in the primary
correct.
Of that party.
Correct. For the office-qualified provisions.
Right.
We also provided for a performance base. So
right.
This gives more flexibility to third parties and independents. For those who feel they can do it, we require that if they get twice the number of the standard $5 contributions, they'll get the same amount of money as an office-qualified party.
Oh, okay. Talk about these performance-qualified individuals, because I think that's going to help clarify some of these dimensions here.
Okay. Performance-qualified candidates basically show that they have actually can perform. So in that context, if they ran for assembly, they actually got 1,000 $5 contributions.
Right.
They would be able to get the same exact amount as an office qualified.
Rather than getting one-fifth as much.
Correct. And the reason for that is, if you look at the statewide, and it makes it the clearest example, if you look statewide, the Democratic Party registration is 7 million. Republican is about 4 million. The Green Party, which is the largest third party in the state of California, is about 140,000.
Right.
So from various academic perspectives, various suggestions here in the Capitol, it doesn't make sense to give the exact number of amount of dollars to folks at a statewide level when clearly in the primary Steve Wesley and Phil Angelides have to appeal to 7 million Democrats, and say a Green Party candidate has to appeal to only to 150,000.
Okay.
However, we did provide that opportunity that they get the same amount of money with a slightly higher standard.
Do the contributions for office qualified candidates need to come from registered voters of their own party?
No.
So Republicans can give money to Democrats and vice versa, and Greens can give money to anybody they want as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. Let freedom reign.
Okay. Now, I think things are starting to come into shape here. There's the office-qualified candidates who are registered in these three main parties,
mm-hmm.
and they have to get, for Assembly, for example, $5 contributions.
Correct.
And then after the, one of them will continue on to the general election.
Right.
If any of them lose, can they requalify them? Can those who don't win the primary requalify themselves as a performance-based, a performance-qualified candidate for
no.
the general election?
No, we don't provite a you know
second chance. No second bite at the
no
apple
backies.
Here. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the kinds of candidates that there are. What's a qualified candidate?
Well, a qualified candidate is seeking a nomination from a state office from a party that is not an office-qualified party. So your qualified candidate is your standard third-party candidate.
Who
Peace and Freedom, a Green Party, and in some cases, Natural Law Party, the Libertarians, and there are several other parties actually that have qualified for the ballot.
And what levels of funding are they entitled to?
They actually have the opportunity either to go to a performance base, so that's still an option for them, or they can actually go with the standard, which would be 20% of what a standard office-qualified party candidate would get.
Okay. Say a little bit about the bookkeeping and how people then go about becoming any of these types of candidates and how they register with the state in some way to qualify themselves.
Well, with respect to reporting requirements, in Arizona, for example, we're basing it on that system. There's a 24-hour turnaround, so when people, you know, make an expenditure against a particular candidate or they receive a contribution, the clean money program that we'd be setting up at the Secretary of State would actually immediately see that, be able to track it, and then provide matching funds if needed to those other candidates. So the reporting requirements are actually very stringent.
Okay, I didn't see anything in this analysis about what happens with independent expenditure candidate spending,
okay.
and how that impacts the candidates that are qualified to get the public money. How does that work under the bill?
In the case of an independent expenditure, which
and tell again our listeners what an independent expenditure is and how important it is in this whole process.
Absolutely, for your viewers, an independent expenditure is basically when an interest group advocates on behalf of a particular candidate, but without specifically saying vote for so and so. So they're kind of portraying that individual. They're saying who sort of represents that particular issue, but they're not flat out saying I'm against so and so.
In order to be an independent expenditure, you need to not use the name of the candidate one way or the other.
I believe that's the standard. Yeah.
So if you can you show his or her picture on
sure,
in your ads?
Likeness, and you can certainly make a case for who's going where you would like them to go. So an NRA can do it, a Sierra Club, various other interest organizations
right.
can portray who's for the interest they're advocating.
And how significant are these independent expenditures as part of the political process
in
these
in
days?
The current system, they are a very complicating factor towards the end of elections because currently it's sort of a way of hiding, campaign strategy where certain people spend all this money in independent expenditures and they're not they're not coordinating with necessarily the official campaign,
right.
but they're still campaigning, quote-unquote, on behalf of that candidate. So
okay.
what we do to respond to
right.
that in the clean money system
right.
is that if anybody advocates against a particular candidate or for another candidate against the clean money candidate,
right.
they get an immediate match from that expenditure.
Okay. A not frequently observed part of this bill has to do with lowering existing limits for campaign contributions overall. Could you address that a little bit and talk about the reason for that and the dimensions of it?
That's sort of a secondary issue,
right.
Mark, and so we're actually looking at that. We want to focus actually more on clean money and public financing of campaigns.
Right.
So We're actually not sure if we're going to continue with that provision of the bill.
So that might actually drop out.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're focusing so much more on the clean money program itself.
Okay. Now, we've talked about how people qualify. How much money do they get after they qualify, and when do they get it, and what can they use it for?
Oh, they can use it for campaign purposes. So that's pretty much anything you see now in a campaign, TV ads, mailers, et cetera.
Right.
And that's exactly where we're what we'd like them to do. We want them to be equally competitive with the currently privately financed candidate. The amount of money you receive is really dependent on what race you're running in.
Right.
Currently, our base amount in the assembly is $100,000 for our primary.
Right.
However, we provide, as we've talked about before, matching funds. So if in the case of a race where Mark Straussman is running for assembly and he gets his $100,000 from the Clean Money Fund, and Armando Veramontes is a privately financed candidate, and he raises $1 million.
Right.
You, as a clean money candidate, would get matching dollar for dollar from the state up to $1.5 million, which makes you competitive in over 90% of the races.
I'm sorry, up to $1.5 million for
yes.
assembly?
Yeah, for the primary and the general, so for the total race.
Oh, because it was my understanding that there was a limit in here of five times the base amount.
True, but there is some flexibility. If you're in a certain district,
right.
you can actually transfer what you would get in the general fund if you were the only
candidate,
because you obviously would win.
Right.
So you can actually get up to $750,000 for the primary and $750,000 for the general. So you can go up as high as $1.5 million for the assembly.
Okay. Now, as Everett Dirksen said, a million here, a million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. How much is this going to cost the beleaguered taxpayers of California?
Well, our initial estimates show about a $130 million, but you know the real cost, Mark, is the cost to our democracy right now. We have a privately financed system where a handful of special interests are impacting legislation in Sacramento and all across the state. We see, because of the gridlock that's here, because of the war of special interests that is fought over here in the legislature, people have to go to the initiative and spend more money there. They put in an initiative that nobody can change within the legislature because there's such strict requirements on changing initiatives through legislation. We feel that budget gridlock, the basically erosion of our campaigning, really making campaigning more negative than it's ever been before, and the influence of money on cogent public policy has a greater cost to this democracy.
Now, this bill doesn't address public funding for initiatives. What impact would you speculate that the passage and implementation of clean money would have on the nature of the legislature and the impact of that differently elected legislature on the need for or the possibility of legislation through initiative?
Well, I think ultimately we're seeing the initiative increasingly be used because people feel that they can't get reasonable solutions passed here, so they pass very irrational solutions on the initiative, and they either put them in the Constitution or put them in parts of the law that they can't be easily changed. So we actually feel if clean money passed, we would see actually more bipartisanship, and we'd actually see more rational solutions for the people of the state of California.
Okay. Now, I wanted to revisit this point of candidates who are performance-based versus office-based,
mm-hmm.
and the rationale for providing one-fifth as much money for the performance-qualified as the office-qualified. What's the rationale for that?
That was actually a request from the Green Party. They actually preferred it that way because they felt that they actually could be a performance-based candidate because they see such solidarity among their particular members,
right.
that they actually feel that the larger contribution threshold was a threshold that they could attain.
The larger number of contributions, you mean? For example, 1,000 in an assembly district?
Correct. Because and there's some truth to that because most third parties actually reflect almost 90 to 100% what's the word?
Solidarity,
I guess, yes. In terms of the candidate they support,
right.
they don't vote outside of their party.
Right.
They actually believe quite strongly that they can meet that threshold, and they actually supported, that was their idea for their amendment.
And saying that Democrats and Republicans would be taken care of under the law, and the Green Party would be taken care of under their own activism, essentially.
Correct.
To the exclusion of other third parties, I guess.
I don't think so. The other third parties also reflect the same kind of 100% as we see. Also, there are various other third parties that have a philosophical problem with public funds in general.
Right.
So they probably would never, because of their own personal philosophical and political point of view, they would never accept clean money funds because they don't believe that they should.
Okay, what does the system look like from the point of view of an independent candidate who doesn't want to be affiliated with any either Democratic, Republican, Green, or any of the other third parties?
Well, obviously, independent's a little bit different because independent candidates don't have a primary;
they right.
go straight to the general. So the requirements are a little bit different. In the case of statewide office, we do have a slightly different standard than the party folks.
Right.
And it's a percentage of the vote, which escapes me at this point.
Okay.
But we had to make some different changes because they don't face a primary.
So independent candidates can qualify under this for any of the constitutional offices?
Absolutely.
Okay. And in the Senate and Assembly races, what's the procedure for them? They just sit out the primary season?
Yeah.
And then they get this this exploratory and qualifying period in terms of the general election.
Yes, and they'll be able to submit the number of qualifying signatures the same as any other candidate, or they can go for the performance-based system also.
Distinguish there between signature. I don't understand. Signatures and contribution and performance-based.
Okay, so In every case, you have to get a $5 contribution and a signature from that same person.
A signature saying you're the only person I'm supporting in this race? Or
yes.
Something? Okay.
And then you take that and you take that to, you give it to the candidate. They'll actually go to the Secretary of State or the County Registrar.
Right.
And then verify that person and they validate whether that's a valid $5 contribution and
right.
signature.
Now,
They
need to meet the same quantitative level, the same number of people as the office-qualified candidates, right? 500 or 1,000, depending on whether it's a Assembly or Senate seat?
Correct.
And are they then entitled to the full 100,000 full 150,000 for the Assembly and whatever it is for the Senate?
In the case of performance-based,
right.
if they meet that threshold, yes, they would have the same amount of funding as an office-qualified candidate.
They don't get one-fifth as much?
No. They could do that if they have a lower amount. So if they have the $255 contributions, they would get the lower amount. If they exceed that, then they get the same amount.
Oh, you mean they can get one-fifth by getting half of the contributions.
Correct.
And they can get 100%
with
by getting the full number of contributions.
With double the contributions.
Double or equal to the number that obviously the candidates who qualify as office qualifying candidates through the primary
mm-hmm.
Don't have to re-qualify for the money during the general election, but they do have to win the primary.
Correct.
And candidates who lose in the primary are now out of the picture, although if they want to do something else, but they can't get any public funding.
No.
But the independent candidates who don't participate in the primary at all, in order to participate in the general election, they have to fulfill the same qualifying requirements that the office-qualified candidates had to meet during the primaries?
Yes.
And if they do, then they get the full amount of money that the office-qualified candidates get in their general election campaign.
Correct.
And they have the same protections against independent expenditures as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's quite a complex system with so many different factors.
Okay.
And looking closer at the at our elections, you can see there's so many different things you have to take into consideration when you're doing public financing of campaigns.
Okay. Now I want to do two other questions. One has
sure.
to do with the allegation from people who oppose this that these limitations are limitations on free speech by limiting, because we didn't mention it, of course, candidates who receive these public funds are not entitled to raise, neither required nor allowed to collect money from anybody else for their campaign purposes. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. That's the basis of the program. In terms of the First Amendment concerns, Buckley v. Valeo is pretty much the same Supreme Court case that clarifies things, and as long as public financing isn't mandated on everybody, it can be upheld as constitutional, and it's not an abridgment of any First Amendment right or any free speech. In fact, in a very real sense, it promotes free speech because it promotes more debate, it encourages more candidates to run, and allows them to really make the case in the free market of ideas.
Okay, now what's the politics of getting this passed? Who's supporting it most strongly? Who, if anyone, is opposing it? And what's the landscape in that area?
Well, obviously the biggest ardent supporter is Assemblymember Lonnie Hancock. She's
right.
been meeting with many members of the legislature to discuss any other secondary concerns or technical concerns they have in the legislation. I think the big hurdle at this point is addressing the cost issue. As you mentioned earlier, it's about $130 million, and so we're looking at several financing mechanisms, and we're going to have to work with the Appropriations Committee at this point to address that concern.
Talk about the politics in the Appropriations Committee. How big is it? Do you have a count on how it looks now? What are you doing to move it in the direction that you'd like?
Well, Lonnie will be meeting with all the members of the Appropriations Committee, and if those are if people are interested in actually advocating on behalf of the bill, I would encourage them to fax letters of support to 916-319-2149 and make it attention to Assemblymember Judy Chu.
Right.
She is the chair of the Assembly Appropriations Committee, and Lonnie will be meeting with her to discuss the financing mechanism for the bill.
What's the timetable for that? When's it going to be?
We'll
be
having a hearing on Wednesday.
Right.
And the
That's Wednesday, the upcoming Wednesday here, the 18th of January.
Correct, January 18th.
Right.
We will have that hearing that day. Because of the cost of the bill, it goes to a file called suspense.
Right.
Where any bill that has a cost to the state or a savings to the state over $100,000 goes to. From that file, they do a vote about what bills make it off that file, and
right.
they go straight to the assembly floor.
So does that vote on the suspense calendar, is that conducted in the Appropriations Committee?
As well. So it's usually in the same day. So we would have the hearing early on Wednesday morning, and then the suspense file will be voted on probably later that afternoon.
Not Thursday. I spoke to Assemblymember Chu yesterday, and she said vote on Thursday. But you're not sure will it be Wednesday or Thursday?
I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday.
Okay. There seemed to be a provision in one version of the bill that said expenditures over $500 for equipment are not allowed. Is that still in there?
Actually, that provision is another one that's kind of been registered with several key staff here in the building, so we're looking at that particular provision and making amendments to it.
Because does that mean that if the campaign wants to buy a computer, for example, or a video camera,
exactly,
it can't do it?
In its current form, that may have been the case. We're looking at that to provide more flexibility. Again, there's a lot of issues with the legislation in terms of these side issues that we want to minimize and focus on the clean money program itself. So,
okay, and where would those amendments take place if they did?
In appropriations.
Okay.
Is probably where a lot of amendments will happen. Currently, we're doing amendments also to require that ultimately, because this amends the Political Reform Act, we are going to require the legislation to go to a vote of the people.
Is that in the bill now?
It should be in the bill probably Wednesday morning.
And that means, and when would that vote take place?
The next election. So if the bill were to become law this year, it would have to go on the ballot the next time we have an election. So currently, unless the governor calls a special election.
And he's not likely to do that very often in the future, is he?
Well, it depends.
Okay.
But if he doesn't,
right.
it would be June 3rd of 2008. So
the bill, as I understand it, takes effect in 2000, as it's now written, take effect January 1st, 2007.
True, but...
and you're saying if it... Yeah, go ahead.
It wouldn't actually officially go fully into effect until a vote of the people, because ultimately the Political Reform Act was passed by the people in 1974. Any modifications to it... can be done, but you usually have to go to the people.
So that's really not optional. It's necessary in order to implement this because it amends the Political Reform Act of 1974. It's got to be referred to the voters.
In most cases, there is another caveat that allows for the bill to be voted by two-thirds of vote for each house.
Right.
But that's a much higher threshold. And to be quite frank, it's the reason why there's so much budget gridlock, because the two-thirds vote requirement makes it very difficult. It allows for maybe 10 to 15 people to uphold the entire state budget.
Right.
It's a system which we don't want to go through
okay.
for such a large change.
Say a little bit more about the complete timing here. The bill is going to be voted on appropriations on next Wednesday.
Yes.
When does it have to be out of the assembly?
Well, due to the fact that it's a second year, it's a bill in its second year,
right.
year session, it has to be out of its house of origin, which is the assembly in this case, as Lonnie introduced it in the Assembly.
Right.
It has to be out of the House of Origin by the end of the month. So after we go to appropriations, if they voted out on Wednesday, we will probably be taking up a floor vote early the next week.
Does it have to go to the Public Safety Committee?
No, that was a referral that was included initially, but we've taken out key provisions that required a committee hearing on that.
Right.
So we're not going to the Assembly Public Safety Committee.
How hopeful are you that it'll pass appropriations?
I'm very optimistic. A lot of people are seeing that. First of all, in with respect to AB 583, the LA Times has endorsed it. The San Francisco Chronicle, Sacramento Bee has basically said, keep the discussion going. Many people are looking at the sort of cloud of corruption that's descending upon Capitol Hill and the Bush administration, and are looking at it and say, hey, there's got to be a better way. Nancy Pelosi mentioned on another show, and I won't say the show's name, Mark.
Okay.
But she mentioned on another show about even the Democrats in Congress are looking at public financing of campaigns. Ultimately, what we have seen is contribution limits, codes of ethics, all these different reforms that everybody talks about in campaign finance reform. Don't do it because they're nibbling around the edges. The only way to get the influence of money out of legislation and politics in general is to have public financing of campaigns. It's better for the people that they represent that they be beholden to them rather than a few key special interests that paid for their campaign.
He who pays the piper calls the tune.
Absolutely.
How optimistic are you that it'll pass the Assembly?
We're working on that right now. Lonnie will be talking to key members, and she's working very closely with the Speaker of Assembly, who has been supportive of the bill, and we're hoping he will continue to support the bill. And she'll be calling many of her fellow Assembly members in the Central Valley and in Los Angeles to see if they'd be interested in supporting this legislation.
Is there a time restriction for its consideration in the Senate?
No. I mean, we do have to be out of the we ultimately have to be completed by the end of session, which
right.
comes in around September, but
right.
we're right now under a severe deadline given the fact that this is the second year.
Right.
We have to be out by the end of this month.
Is there a companion bill in the Senate? I see that Senator Simidian is listed as a co-author of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Will the Senate just consider whatever the Assembly passes out?
I think so. I think what we'll do is once we have a bill out of appropriations off the Assembly floor, we'll go to the Senate Elections Committee, Senate Appropriations Committee, and then to the Senate floor. So this is pretty much the bill and the only bill, to my knowledge, that's really about public financing of campaigns and establishing the clean money program.
Okay, one last short question and then a wrap-up.
Sure.
What impact will passing this AB 583 clean money, clean elections bill have around the country if California leads the way again by passing and implementing this?
You said it, Mark. California leads the country in so many different ways. It sets the tone for presidential elections. It sets the tone for national debate. I mean, what happens here affects just about every state in the country. We've seen that on the war in Iraq. We've seen that on the issue of gay marriage. And I think we'll see that on the issue of campaign finance reform.
Okay. Paint a picture of what California politics will look like a few years after AB 583 is implemented into law.
I think we see an improved debate. I think we see more focus on legislation that actually impacts the people of California, and less about legislation that impacts a key few special interests.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. I want to thank you for explaining all the details and for giving us the big picture as well, and I look forward to further conversations with you as the process continues.
Thanks, Mark. I can't wait.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.